Hello.
Hello, and it looks like we are recording, which is super fantastic. Hi, kids. So this is part next, 11B.
All right.
It's getting very complicated. At some point, I'll probably break down and come up with a new system and fuck everything up. Everything.
That's fine. You can just go back and renumber everything.
Yeah, and just done. But I can't because then all the links will be different, and it's not. You don't want to fuck with that.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we were talking actually about the beauty of performance, and I guess in terms of using performance as a means for activism, and how some of us, as I did, come into it sort of accidentally, just doing my solo show work, which my solo show, my first one, was about my experiences of discovering I was kinky, et cetera, et cetera. And that show has grown and evolved as I have over the past decade plus that I've been performing it. And the most recent installation I did of it was in Stockholm, actually, where I performed it with a virulent ear infection.
Oh shit, right.
Sick as a fucking dog and crying in between chewing fistfuls of paracetamol. And that was fantastic. And the next time I do it, I hope I will be in better health. But you, JP, had a thought that sounded like you wanted to.
Well, there's activism is a very particular thing, and there's one of the benefits I think that comes from performance is it is very much a pull form of activism. Like you said that this the last time you were talking about a woman who came to see your show a second time and brought her mom, and bringing her mom to your show was primarily about it was like a way that she could come out to her mom. And also a way that her mom could get perhaps a little bit of context or awareness of what she's talking about when she comes out. So it was like a combination of both of those things, right? And to me, that's very much a kind of, if I had to give it a name, it's sort of like pull activism, right? You're in a space. People choose to enter into that space and then they receive some knowledge. But because they're walking into that space, they are automatically, well, with very few exceptions, they will be automatically more receptive to hearing what it is that you have to say. Right? They're there, they're looking for something in a way. They're looking for something, they're open to something, they're open to learning, they're open to getting a different perspective, they're open to possibly changing their own perspective, right? That's very different than what I might, excuse me, what I might refer to as like push activism, which is like marches. Marches, while they can be amazingly important in terms of claiming space that has been taken away from someone, or claiming space that a particular group feels like they have been purposefully and constantly excluded from. The problematic aspect of a march is that sometimes people are just not going to listen to you.
Or dismiss you as being, angry black people, because that happens.
Yep, true. Or dismiss you as being, like a gimp, like a leather gimp show. Right? Like it just becomes about a sort of spectacle more than anything else. So that's and that's the sort of push activism. And pull activism can take a it can take up it can take the form of something that's like a performance, right? It could take the form of something that's like a workshop. I think if you're doing a workshop, there's more of a chance that you'll be getting people who are already speaking the same language in. And then if you're doing a performance, there's more of a chance that you'll get those people who are like, oh, this sounds kinky and fun. Maybe I'll go. And then maybe those people walk away from the performance experience with a little more behind them, right? With a, like their perception has changed, or they're more educated in some way. You know, they've been given another way of looking at something that they wouldn't have necessarily taken in or created space for in themselves if it was in a push form. And then because human beings are addicted to narrative, and the vast majority of performance by its nature is relatively narrative based, it's actually like an easier, it's like a sweeter pill.
Yeah, it is the candy coating, right? And the thing is that I happen to believe that there is obviously there's room for both types. And there's some situations where you're not going to get the people that you need to get by pulling. You know, they're not going to come to the show, they're not going to listen to the storytelling, they're not going to buy the book. And you need to get in their faces. When you can pull, I always feel like it's important to have as many layers as you can to the information that you're sharing. It's part of the reason when I present, for example, there are like 10 things that if you were to go to 50 of my classes, you would hear the same 10 things over and over again, regardless of whether or not it's quote unquote on topic, right? If I'm teaching a class about edge play, it may not be on topic to talk about how important it is to negotiate aftercare. But I have a stick up my ass about it, so I find a fucking way to include that in my class. You know, it's like you negotiate for some shit or you shut the fuck up when you don't get it. It's all you. You know, and present that with the smiling, singing, and dancing. Here's a funny anecdote about what happens when you don't do that. You know, or here's a sobering anecdote about how when you do that, it can still go off kilter. So know that there's no guarantees, whatever those things are. But by explaining it in terms of something that is just a universal experience for people having to negotiate to get what they want, blah, 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 and in a storytelling form and having it be consistent, you are it's a smaller push because people didn't come expecting to get that message, but they did. And that's where you can sort of weasel your way in and get your message across in a way that's more palatable because people aren't getting, they're not raising their defenses up against it, you
True,
know?
but that so that's interesting because that leads me directly into the next thing I was going to say, which is that is
You're welcome.
so tricky. Thank you. That is so tricky though, because performance can end up being performance can end up being genuine. Performance can also end up being, it's odd for me to say it this way, performance can end up being so performative as to be distancing, right? Performative can end up being so sort of over the top theatrical that it can't be taken seriously, or that is taken only as spectacle, or it can be done so that it is nothing but shocking, and therefore the audience is like, I have no in here. I have no way of associating with anything that's happening on this stage. It might as well be happening. I might as well be watching Spider-Man, right?
What was the name of that Spider-Man? Like, if don't enter the dark, up against the dark in the wall. The subheading of the musical was
Oh.
something terrible.
Was it, this is the New York musical, right? Was it Take Back the Dark?
I think it was something like that.
It was four words. I remember that. Not for a single moment did I think that sounds like something I'd like to
No,
see.
it was terrible. People were only going to see it because people were going to see it for the same reason that many people go to NASCAR events. There were so many accidents that people were hoping to see, you know, fly wires get tangled or set pieces fall or the turntables get stuck. Just every nightmare, every just a terrible ugh, shudder, shudder.
Now what's and now what's quite interesting about that is I love Julie Taymor.
I don't know if I don't know if I've. What else is she? Wait, hold on. What
Actually,
did
you
I
know
see
what?
that she?
I need to clarify that sentence.
I'm like, wait a second. What else has she done?
So I love did you ever see Titus?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Wait, are you talking about the movie or are you
I'm
talking about
talking
the
about
show
I'm talking about
general?
the movie.
Yes, I did.
So Titus is for me one of my favorite Shakespeare adaptations on film ever.
Yeah, it's good.
And so much of that has to do with her, with Julie Taymor's amazingly specific, visually gorgeous interpretation.
Word.
Followed by, have you ever seen Prospero's books? It's
No.
Peter Greenaway doing a version of The Tempest.
Oh, that's why I didn't see it. I have some issues with Peter Greenaway.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
What kind of
it's...
issues do you have with Peter Greenaway?
I feel like he's deliberately trying to. I feel like his films are designed to elicit an emotion versus tell a story. And I do not like it when it's like what Spielberg does. It's like, and now you will cry, and now you will laugh, and now here's the moment where you feel this swelling in your chest of love and affection for the main character. And I feel like what Greenaway did, and The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Your Mother is what cemented it for me. Because I was sitting there the whole time going, I'm not shocked and I'm not upset, and I know that's what you want. And it's not working, and I don't like you, and you like it's like bullying in the way he presents his stories, and I'm always like, oh, I don't want to. You're not the boss of me, Peter Greenaway.
Now, what's absolutely amazing is that this has actually come right back around to talking about kink performance because, well, because I have a feeling that a significant amount of kink performance tends to be designed to shock.
Well, the fact that people are doing BDSM as performance versus playing is something that is an ongoing issue for me. I remember someone seeing somewhere a class was being taught. It was called something like performing in the dungeon. And the class was specifically about creating theatrical scenes, right? And I had two. Like my brain split. It's like my brain pulled itself out of either ear and started screaming at either half. And part of me was like, oh, you son of a bitch, you should have totally written out that class. And the other side of my brain is like, you disgusting whore. This is not about performing. It's not about. And I get the desire to perform. And the thing is, if you are an exhibitionist, and your kink is being watched, it behooves you to create scenes that people want to watch. Because then your fetish is met, right? I get that. But what I fear is that people feel as though their scenes need to be spectacular in order to be quote unquote good, in order to be accepted. I don't know that the majority of people attending that class are saying, I'm an exhibitionist and I'm going to now use these skills and this particular skill set to have my fetish for being watched because people's energy towards mine turns me on versus people who are saying, how do I do the scene that people are talking about? How do I do the flashy scene? How do I do the one that gets me more, partners? Which to me personally is less awesome.
You talk about the fetish of being watched,
And the thing is, the fetish of being
and
watched is one thing, but it's different than the fetish of showing off.
yes, it's also different than being an actor,
Well, yes.
because you could be a, no, because I worked with enough actors to be able to say this with relative certainty. You can be an amazing actor. You can be a fantastic, captivating performer who does not have a fetish for exhibitionism and who does not have that much of an interest in being watched. What they have an interest in is acting.
All right.
And in some ways, I feel like that there's a difference between doing a scene that you want to get attention from
Right.
and doing a scene that is designed to be performed.
Well, it's like to me, for example, as an actor, if I am telling a story that's true in my life, I'm getting up on stage and or on a podcast or whatever it is, and I have been brought in to tell my story, I am telling you the story using the skills of acting, but I'm not doing a performance for you. If I am doing a scene that happens to be entrancing for the people around me, my performance in the scene might be interesting to you, but I'm not acting. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's interesting because I remember having someone write somewhere on FetLife that they had seen a scene that I was in and that they found it entertaining, and I cried. And the person did not mean any harm, and I was PMSing, so there's that. But the fact is that I was like, I'm not there to entertain you. You know, there's very specific to me. And to me, in that moment, I'm like, you're watching an expression of my sexuality. For it to be entertaining to you, sort of gives me this sort of like you Caesar thumbs up or thumbs down on the throne. You know, that's not why I was there. That had nothing to do with my intention.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not like I wrote back to the person going, fuck you, bitch, remember. But I did realize that that was a very deep differentiation for me. It made a big difference. And that's something that I am aware of as someone who people recognize on site, for example. I do not want to be necessarily in the middle of the dungeon, in the middle of the party with all the attention, because I'm like, I get plenty of that. If I'm doing BDSM, 99% of the time it's for me and my partner, or mm-hmm. just for my partner, because, you know, they're like, I'm going to do this horrible shit. I'm like, I'm going to hate it. And so therefore it's all for them, you know. So all of that makes sense to me. All of that is very illuminating, but I often wonder if a lot of what people do is based on what they see other people doing, a desire to be cool, a desire to be edgy, a desire to be bigger, a desire to be more. You know, it's like, it's not enough to just be caned in the corner. It's not enough to be hogtied and have someone poke you with something sharp. You have to be inverted, hogtied, and on fire, you know, with hooks, preferably, through your hamstrings, and eight people whipping you at the same time, you know, to show how hardcore you are. Now, mind you, if that's your scene and that really turns you on, that's great. But I promise you that a great many people who are doing these big flashy scenes are doing so because they feel it's what they have to do. And I'm not so excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the, in some ways, it's the essential conflict of having parties happen in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And by public spaces, I just mean spaces where other people who you may right. not necessarily know personally are present.
Right.
Spaces where somebody could purchase a ticket and come, as opposed to a space where let's say everybody is invited.
Yes. Versus a home party where it's just invited guests.
Exactly. The one of the bigger concerns for me, or one of the bigger sort of points of conflict, I guess, for me, is the difference between the gap between what it is that you are doing when you are playing in a public space
mm-hmm.
and what it is people are seeing you do when you are playing in public space.
Right.
That there is a lack of awareness, I think. Not that there's a lack of awareness, but there is an awareness gap between those two things. Because some people may jump to the thought of, if you are doing this in public, it must be because you want to be watched.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you want to be watched, that must mean that you want to not be that you want that watching to be engaged.
Yeah.
Right? You want it to be engaged watching. You want it to be connected watching. You want it to be appreciative watching. And there we come to this particular person's use of the word entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That language is, I had a good time watching your scene.
Right.
And
the thing is that for me as a performer, that's a particularly charged word, because being entertaining, for example, isn't even always the goal of theater, right?
Yes.
And so for me, it had that additional charge. And again, I'm just hoping that someone in 3 years listens to it and goes, oh my God, I said that. I'm a terrible person. No, you're not. I'm just very sensitive and weird. So don't worry about it. But I bring it up because I hadn't realized until that moment how heavy a difference that was, difference between doing a scene, performing a scene, and being involved in a scene that is for consumption of the public specifically. You have to keep in mind, and this is something Lee and I were careful to underscore when we were writing Playing Well with Others, sometimes people go to parties because they have no other place to play. You know, they have kids, they have thin walls, they have, you know, maybe they're poly and they don't have a place that's not charged for both partners or whatever it is. So there's a lot of people who go to parties who aren't exhibitionists, you know. And there are some people who go to parties who just, you know, will have to know several people who have to be blindfolded in order to have a good time at a party. Mind you, those are bottoms. I think a blindfolded top might be problematic, unless they were doing particular types of play,
Yep, I would
in
agree
which
with that.
case, you know, if you were blindfolded and you were caning someone, you could probably do that, you know, but
Although now I do have to say, that's just got me thinking about the kind of engagement that I could have with somebody if I was blindfolded and they weren't.
well, you could, if you're rigging, you could certainly rig blindfolded.
Yeah, I wasn't even actually thinking about rigging. I was having like a non-rope. I was having a non-rope moment.
Oh my God, that would be super hot though.
Blindfold rigging?
Blindfold topping. I don't think I've ever had anyone top me blindfolded. Now I'm thinking about it. It's great though.
Oh, the idea of it is fantastic. I mean, being able to.
I've seen Lee do it. That's where I've seen it.
Oh, you have.
But I have not. It was part of a show. So it was specifically for entertainment purposes.
Oh, see, so there you go. That's where it is then, because then suddenly it becomes okay. If you're blindfolded in front of an audience, you're blindfolded in front of an audience, you can't. I have not performed very much. I am a backstage person. I enjoy being invisible. The moments that I have performed, it is impossible to not be conscious of where the eyes are. And so the sorts of choices that I might make if there was no audience, I would feel a kind of underlying pressure to not make those choices.
Unless, of course, you're blindfolded and you were able to put aside the fact that there's an audience there.
Yeah, but how can you put that aside? Because at
You
some point you put that
pretend you're
blindfold
not
on.
there.
I suppose you could pretend you're not there, but are you really pretending that they're not there? Because, like,
Fourth wall, baby, fourth wall.
sure, I mean, whatever, fourth wall, blah, blah, blah. The fact is, if I'm in the middle of engaging with somebody and the choice that I want to make in that moment is to do absolutely nothing for 3 minutes so I can watch them squirm, that's not going to play in front of an
Oh
audience.
my God, I will throw down and disagree with you and make note we are having our first
All
disagreement.
right, all right.
Because
You think.
I will tell you, have you ever seen complete stillness on stage with like an actor or actors who were like on their shit? Because I tell you, I did a show where there was 2 minutes of silence and I was not moving. I shifted my weight from one foot to the other over the course of 2 minutes. That was my action.
I've worked on pieces that involve a lot of stillness.
Right.
I've seen some beautiful work in Butoh
Sure. See, there
that
you go,
involves
right
a lot of
there.
stillness.
And when people are focused, I tell you, audiences, oftentimes, if there is food along the way, you can starve them for a little bit because people will start to read nuance into like a bead of sweat rolling down to the crack of your ass. And I'm telling you, I think I know if I saw a scene where there was a good couple minutes in the middle where you just saw the top watching the bottom, like, you know, in a predicament or whatever, their focus would not only be illustrative of what the core thing about SM is, which is energy and intention, they would become this huge sea of voyeurs on something that they don't typically get to see, which is that quietness. And that's what I think people miss in Dungeons. And actually, now I'm like, now I have written an entire performance piece. Thank you very much.
Right.
Based on that, because I think that it would be challenging for them for the first minute or so. But I think by the set, if you could carry this off for like 5 minutes, people would be breaking down crying. I think people would really be forced past their discomfort with quiet and understand how powerful it is to feel that connection. And it wouldn't be 100% like I totally grok it now, but I really think that people would really get something from that other type of communication that we have when we're not talking, when we're not filling up the void or the discomfort with words or with whip cracks or cane strokes or screams or moans or whatever, you know?
So it's a way of, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to make up a word.
Yes.
At least I think I'm going to make up a word. I'm just going to say it and we can figure out later if I've actually made up a word or not. It's performatizing silence.
Yes.
It's not actual silence.
Well, the thing is, if the whole thing, if it's a meta performance, then I suppose it is. But I think it has to be actual silence because if it's bullshit silence, if nothing's happening, then it won't work. And that's the thing, is that silence and stillness is not the absence of something happening. It's something happening on a different level. So if the people doing it were performing it, like, look at us, we're not saying anything, we're not moving, derp da der, isn't this super cool, Buto shit, that would not work, and the audience would call shenanigans and wrestle and get restless and bored. But I contend that if you had people who were fully fucking invested in that connection, it would absolutely work. And it'd be fucking nuts so awesome.
All right. I still have enough of a break in my brain between a scene and a performance. Some of it has to do with the way that duration applies to
Yes.
performance versus scene. Part of it has to do with a sort of the way that a scene can have a soft in and a soft out that is more problematic to do in a performance structure.
Why?
Maybe just because audiences aren't that smart.
Oh, well, you get smart audiences then. Look
Oh
at
yeah, we're just gonna ship smart audiences into somewhere?
Yes, we are. Look at the fact that people are crowding to see shit like Sleep No More, right? Which has been running here in New York for I don't know how long. It's six stories of Macbeth.
I've seen it.
Oh,
It's brilliant. I plan on seeing it again.
see, I need to see it. I haven't seen it yet. That certainly has a very fluid idea of what the duration of the show is. You could, from what I understand, walk through it in an hour. Or you could spend the whole 3 hours that you have allocated. You know, and you can spend that 3 hours on one floor, or you can follow an actor, or you can, you know, decide to be in this room and see what happens to you, whatever this is. But the fact of the matter is that you create an environment where all that can happen. You know, I did a show at the Magic Theater that was 4.5 hours, completely changed the set 3 times, had a cast of 40 something. And, you know, in the middle of the show, the audience had dinner. And so the experience was completely nutso immersive. And a lot was going on, and no one ever saw all of the show at one time, right? You had to sort of come back and experience more of it. What was kind of amazing about it is that you could have a very full immersive experience, or you could not. And I feel like you could take the gorgeousness of the fluidity of BDSM and say, you know what? This is what's going to happen. There's going to be 3 hours. And in that 3 hours, you might see one half hour of play, and the rest of it might be people at the snack table talking. Right?
I hear you. I feel you. I think we're running out of time.
Yes, we are totally running out of time. Okay, so now we're pausing at the snack table thing because I think it's about to cut off.